Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Father Daniel, nice to see you. It wasn't just a couple days ago that I saw you at a fundraiser, yeah?
Yeah, that was great. We had the four sisters here from Vietnam telling us a little bit about their work, and so beautiful. I had a chance to, I went there this past fall and was able to stay at the convent of these sisters, and so just amazing. Amazing people, amazing work. It was beautiful to be able to
But they live
them.
A very Spartan existence.
They certainly do, yeah. And so we were able to connect some people here from the area to help them out in their beautiful work and give them a little less Spartan existence, hopefully.
Yeah, good stuff. So in conjunction with this past weekend's celebration of the baptism of our Lord, we're going to talk about that as our first item here. And
sure.
So there's several questions.
Was there something in the news that that sparked this question
for
you?
Catholic news, the news of the ordinary time.
Right. I guess that's the switch we've made. Yeah.
So first question is, if Jews don't believe in original sin, why were Jews going out to John the Baptist?
Well, I don't think it's such a hard and fast line that Jews don't believe in original sin. I would venture to say that there's many who don't believe in original sin, but there's others that would. I mean, the foundation for the doctrine of original sin is in the book of Genesis. That's part of Jewish scripture. And the Jews don't have a central authority on what's orthodox and what's unorthodox teaching. Like we do as Catholics, we got the papacy, right? We got papal magisterium. The Jews don't really have that in the same way. They have tradition, they've got their rabbis, they've got certain strains of interpretation of scripture, but there's not a centralized authority that says this is legitimate Jewish teaching or not. So there are some Jews that I think would probably understand some sort of a concept of a original fall of our parents, a sin that then affects all of humanity. But to your point, many would not agree that there's any type of original sin. And so their concept of baptism is not the same as ours. They don't have a baptism in Judaism.
All right, well, the next question then, the obvious one is, why did Jesus go out to be baptized since he was free of original sin?
Right.
And he also had not committed actual sin, which is what some say Jews were doing when they were out there with John the Baptist. They were atoning for actual sin. So why would Jesus then have gone out to do his cleansing?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's actually a question that the fathers of the church asked and addressed very clearly. So they, from their perspective, Jesus was not sanctified by the waters. He sanctified the waters so that then the waters could sanctify us through baptism. So he takes on and he shows through the humility of accepting baptism that he has taken on human nature and that he is bringing sanctification to the human race, the wiping away of original sin and a new power invested upon the waters to bring about our salvation.
All right. So then next question is, did Mary need to be baptized? Mary, who was conceived free of original sin?
No. That was an easy one.
All right, so I
throw
I
me
did,
some more softballs.
So I did.
I like this change of pace, Chris. I mean, you're giving me questions that are easy now. Usually,
well,
you throw
this
all
up,
these
okay.
crazy topics that I have no idea about, and you put me on the spot. This is like
right
I love
your,
these softballs.
Well, I remember I asked you those questions a couple weeks ago about your dissertation. That was in the news.
Oh yeah, that was pretty easy.
Yeah. All right, but there is. I did do some research in this one, and there is an ancient tradition documented as early as the 2nd century, and cited by later scholars, that Jesus himself baptized Mary. In the Eastern Orthodox tradition, Mary's Immaculate Conception is not dogma, and she was baptized at the Annunciation when the angel appeared to her. So what is the Catholic view, the Roman Catholic view?
Certainly, I've never heard that Mary was baptized, so that's news to me. Certainly not part of Catholic tradition that Mary was ever baptized. Now, I think we can put it into the historical context of the time. You go back and it's really fascinating. When you go to the Holy Land, you'll find it in the archaeological digs, what they call mikvahs, and they're all over the place. And these were 7 steps leading down into a pool of water. And it was commonplace among the Jews at the time to do ceremonial washings of purification. Now, it's not a baptism in our sense, but there was a sense that there was the sins to be washed away to prepare themselves to worship God worthily. So these mikvahs were present in homes, outside of synagogues, in different places where people could go in and be purified of their sins. Did Mary do that? Of course, because she was a daughter of Israel and did all the common practices of the time.
All right, so the other tidbit that I had not thought about before is that there are only three people whose earthly birthdays we celebrate in the church.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, Mary, and John the Baptist. Yes, so
that's right.
The thought is that John the Baptist was baptized at the Visitation.
Mm. Again, there's no scriptural proof of that. I've certainly never read anything that John the Baptist himself was baptized at the Visitation. He was still in the womb, so it'd be really hard to baptize. And I mean, you could, I guess, take amniotic fluid as a sort of a baptism, although it wouldn't be the proper substance and matter for baptism.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crossed Wires. Let's look at the complex nature of the capture of Nicolas Maduro on January 3rd, as it represents an interesting moment in international law.
Mm-hmm.
Operation Absolute Resolve has been characterized by the government, by the U.S. government, as a police action, i.e. law enforcement versus military action.
Right.
As a police action, the primary goal is apprehension for trial based on criminal indictments versus a military one that would focus on national security. The legal bases for Maduro's capture are the 2020 and 2025 DOJ indictments for narco terrorism and drug trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
But the personnel involved in a police action would normally be the DEA or FBI versus special forces like the U.S. used with Maduro.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, a police action requires the host nation consent or extradition, which obviously Venezuela did not consent to. So we have a kind of muddy water hybrid situation here. The U.S. points to the 1989 arrest of Manuel Noriega in Panama as a blueprint for extracting a head of state on criminal charges. So first question, what if Iran did the same to Trump as he is under indictment in Iran for the 2020 killing of General Qassem Soleimani?
It's an interesting twist on things.
Yeah.
I think that's the slippery slope that it sets a dangerous precedent when you start taking out heads of state. And this is not something new. You went back to 1989, but we can go back into the 60s and 70s when the CIA was taking out heads of state and major officials. I mean, part of the destabilization of Vietnam was taking out Diem back, you know, to start the Vietnam War. So we do have a long history of this type of intervention in other states, and it's always problematic because it destabilizes the country where it is. And there's not always a great plan in place. And sometimes we enter with the presumption that we know how to do this and we can make things happen. Now, I'll say that. And on the flip side, I've had a lot of conversations with Venezuelan friends over the last few weeks as this news has been emerging. And unilaterally, all of them are delighted. And I had one lady who told me, yeah, all of my relatives in Venezuela are so happy with the step that the United States has taken. And they're celebrating, but they can't say anything publicly, and they can't post anything because they're still under scrutiny and a repression of free speech in Venezuela. But unilaterally, I haven't found a single Venezuelan who is upset with that. Now, it's a slanted view. Also, we have people who are expatriates who are living here in the United States. They left the country because it was such a disaster.
Right.
There's probably some people in Venezuela that are not happy with
this. As to comparing it to, say, Iran trying to kidnap Trump, I mean, they probably would do so if they had the power to do so.
Right.
They don't have that power. But the more plausible scenario is the International Criminal Court, which is the only institution mm-hmm. that can issue internationally recognized arrest warrants for individuals,
mm-hmm.
if they were to issue one for Trump. So there have been arguments in favor of the ICC to do so after Trump imposed sanctions on the ICC after they issued arrest warrants for Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu mm-hmm. related to the actions in Gaza. So The argument goes that the ICC is being impeded by Trump's sanctions, and therefore he should be himself indicted under Article 70 of the Rome Statute of the ICC, which forbids the obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm.
So this has not actually happened, but there have been proponents
for
this.
That.
So
right.
You know, it's another angle that makes this just a tricky situation.
It definitely is a tricky situation, and I think sometimes people are approaching it in an overly simplistic way, as if there's a cut black and white. There's not. And so the posturing of different ways, how do you frame it? Which vantage point are you looking at it from? It is complicated. And I think when there's not a unified worldview on human nature and on what's just and unjust, it further complicates the situation. And what we're seeing is a manifestation of might makes right. So
absolutely, that's what's happening.
Yeah, because your argument was like, well, if Iran had the power, they would come in and take Trump. Well, and Trump feels like he had the power, and he did, and went in and took Maduro, and now there's threats to do the same thing in Cuba or in Iran or in other failed states that are not caring for the good of their people.
All right. Well, as we speak about quote the power, there's right. an interesting subplot to this whole capture. Do you remember the so-called Havana syndrome?
I do.
Mm-hmm. Which started appearing in 2016, where a series of mysterious ailments impacted a cluster of U.S. diplomats stationed in Havana.
Right.
In January 2022, the CIA claimed these attacks, quote, attacks, were not caused by a hostile foreign power, but apparently, according to CNN, near the end of the Biden administration, using Defense Department funding, the CIA purchased, or I don't know if it was the CIA or just the Department of Defense, they purchased a device in the eight-figure range that, although not entirely Russian in origin, contain Russian components. People in Miami, Alexandria, Virginia, and near the White House have reported symptoms of Havana syndrome. So this is also occurring on U.S. soil. And the U.S. Right. apparently has acquired the device that they think
the
was causing
weapon.
So
yeah,
there's two
theories about it. The one was that we bought it. The other was that it was taken out. There were special forces that went in and took this tool, weapon.
Right. So there was apparently also an interview with a surviving member of Maduro's security team, and he describes special forces as being unbelievably effective, in part because this secret weapon. So he describes a very intense sound wave and said he felt like his head was exploding from the inside, and that he said he and his team started bleeding from the nose and vomiting blood. So my first question is, if this is the device that was causing the Havana syndrome and the Russians have this device, well, then why aren't the Russians using this in Ukraine?
No idea. And when you read some of those reports, a lot of it's conjecture. It sounds like a little bit like propaganda, like, oh, these amazing Americans came in and they just destroyed us. I don't know. There's posturing stuffing going on, and how much this is real,
it is interesting, though, that we're looking at a future warfare with devices that can disable a person without killing them.
Right. It is interesting because it actually decreases the immorality of killing a person. You're only temporarily harming them. But let's go back to the key question here, Chris. Is might right? And I think this is where Catholic teaching and Catholic understanding of the human person is so rich, because it brings us back to natural law, well-based and philosophically based and theologically based system for understanding what's good, what's bad, what's evil, and what needs to be done.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
With Christmas and New Year's now past us, it's worth looking back at some of the advice that was floating around in the lead up to the holidays in the secular media.
Mm-hmm.
In a December article in the Huffington Post, author Leah Page asks or talks.
You read the Huffington Post?
Well, I read everything.
Do you really?
I try to get different angles on things.
Okay.
So Leah Page asks or talks about an Oprah podcast with a panel of, quote, experts about whether it was okay to cut off speaking to your parents whom you have disagreements with. Page was disgusted by one of the experts' advice that this was wrong. The HuffPo author talks about how divisive her mother was and how she undermined her and her husband, so she felt justified in cutting her mom off.
Mm-hmm.
She agreed with the other two experts on Oprah's panel who were arguing along the lines of cutting off your parents who upset you is right because you should set boundaries for yourself. So the one who was in favor of not cutting off the parents cited how we've radically expanded our definition of what constitutes harm and are penalizing parents for things that used to not be considered out of bounds. The Wall Street Journal had a different article about parents who are, quote, done being doormats for their estranged children's, unquote, and the counter reaction that's cropped up. So the Catechism of the Catholic Church reminds adult children that the honor owed to parents does not expire when you leave home.
That's right.
While obedience ends with childhood, respect is a lifelong obligation. So one of the primary scriptural bases for this is Sirach chapter 3, where you're advised to, quote, help your father in his old age and do not grieve him as long as he lives, even if he is lacking in understanding. In all your strength, do not despise him, unquote. So what do you think about this notion that people are increasingly not honoring thy mother and father?
Well, it's problematic. Clearly, anytime we violate one of the commandments that God has put in place for our good, it's going to create problems and further exacerbate difficulties in people's lives. I can't think of a single situation where cutting off your parents because you didn't like something they said is actually a good behavior. Now, there can be cases where, okay, maybe a parent who was abusive and has not repented from that, you got to establish a distance.
Which the church teaching recognizes and says that totally. If that's the case, then, you know, your responsibilities then would maybe to pay for somebody else to care for your parents,
right,
but not cut them off.
You got to protect them. And the duty to honor your parents is always there. I mean, even if, like, you know, every once in a while my dad will say something like, "Dad, did you just say that? Come on." And he's starting to slip a little bit more. It doesn't mean that I can now just disparage my father or tear down his reputation with other people. I still respect and honor him. And that obligation continues throughout our whole life. So this tendency to cancel out people that don't agree with me, I think it's infantile. I mean, we need to learn how to dialogue with people and to get along. And in the case of parents or children, we respect and honor our parents. And, you know, we need to also, as the Book of Sirach admonishes parents, don't make your children hate you because you're too hard.
Right, but this is nothing new. We act like this is new, and this has definitely been a subject that's come up more frequently with Trump in his two administrations, where people are not even wanting to go to a Thanksgiving dinner with their aunt or uncle who's a, you know, pro or against or whatever.
Yeah. And in certain senses, there's nothing new with that. Politics and religion have always been contentious subjects that people try to avoid in good company. But I think there's a certain amount of cowardice in that. I do think it's been exacerbated by the use of social media and the people getting so absorbed into their phones and communicating by text that they've lost the art of interpersonal dialogue and conversation, learning how to dialogue with people. It's hard.
Yeah. Well, look, everybody whose parents, who's lucky enough to have your parents grow old enough, you're going to shake your head at things they do and
say.
And so, you know, there's a humility involved with going ahead and caring for them anyways and doing so lovingly.
Right. And staying in the messiness of life. I've heard, you know, a number of my friends are Spanish speaking, coming from Colombia, Venezuela, Mexico. And there's a phrase that has gained traction in Spanish, which is, it's something along the lines of like, I deserve a happy life. And it's become this thing where they're using it as a way to enter into divorce and to break off relationships that get difficult. And I came across this morning that, you know, that the phrase is, choose your hard. And it starts with, you know, marriage is hard. Divorce is hard. Choose your hard. And I think that's what's part of the problem in our society today is we're looking for what's comfortable, what's easy, what affirms me, and we're running away from difficult things. It's cowardice.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
At a recent conference in Arizona organized by Charlie Kirk's organization Turning Point USA, one of the speakers was seen holding a rosary above his head in defiance as the crowd cheered him on. Later, Megyn Kelly on her podcast said this same activist had given her a rosary and that it was giving her a feeling of, quote, empowerment, unquote, and then tweeted that she was off to pray the rosary like virtually all Christians do. Megyn Kelly, by the way, is Catholic and should know that virtually no Protestants pray the rosary.
Right.
In an opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal, the author argues the rosary is increasingly being treated as a prop similar to a red MAGA hat. So as you know, I participate regularly in prison ministry, and one of the things we do is distribute rosaries in the how-to pamphlet to inmates on how to pray the rosary. So I'm slightly conflicted when I do this, as a good chunk of the time when we give out rosaries in prison, they are used for various reasons other than prayer, with most inmates donning the beads as jewelry and some using the rosary as a gang symbol. By the way, we only give out black colored rosaries because of that very reason, so that there's no differentiation in the colors that we hand out.
Sure.
So before handing out the beads, I always ask inmates to explain to me what it is that I'm giving them, and invariably they don't know what it is, so I explain. Well, I can't help but think that this is overall a good thing that we're doing. I regularly encounter the same inmates asking me for replacement rosaries, as they claim the beads that they had were stolen or the guards took them during inspections, even though if I look in the back of their cell, I can see the beads. And so I know then that they're actually selling the beads or trading them for other items. So I'll often explain to them that beads themselves aren't what's important, and it's the prayer pamphlet that I provide them that really matters. And then I always point out that they have a built-in rosary in their hands and feet to keep track of of the count of the prayers. So my question to you is this. Do you think there's any harm in handing out the rosaries, knowing they might be potentially misused by inmates? Or what about this broader misuse of the rosary as a political symbol?
Yeah, it's just the common danger that exists that any spiritual thing can be twisted and misused by people. You know, when I was a little boy, I drank holy water from the font because I was thirsty. That was a misuse of a holy object, probably not a good thing. I was before the age of reason, so I'm not too worried about that impinging upon the salvation of my soul. But that danger, that human danger exists of misuse of sacred things. If it's done intentionally, it's a sacrilege. So, but in this case, I mean, it's a holy object. If we're going at it with good intentions and to really honor the Blessed Virgin Mary, draw closer to Jesus and the mysteries of his life and help other people to do that, God's going to see that and honor that. You know, you can't go through life constantly worried about how people are going to misuse the good things that God has given us.
Well, I'll do you one worse than drinking the holy water. My dad, one of his friends at a Catholic school in New Jersey, his friend stole the communion wine.
Did they drink
before
it?
Before it had been consecrated. So
yeah,
he got kicked out of school, by the way, for that.
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh gosh. Yeah. So it's nothing new under the sun.
Crossed wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires.
By now, everyone has seen the videos of anti-ICE protester Renee Good's unfortunate death on the news or in social media.
Yes.
I say unfortunate because regardless of whether you think she was
or wrong. Anytime a person dies, it's not a good thing.
It's a soul that has passed. Right. There are a number of videos from different angles which show Ms. Good seemingly premeditatedly obstructing traffic, presumably in an attempt to disrupt the ICE enforcement operation.
Right.
Her death has sparked widespread protests. She was a member of a group called ICE Watch, whose mission is to track and disrupt immigration enforcement operations. She seemed to be interfering with ICE operations, having followed the agents and blocking the roadway. The ICE agent shooter named Jonathan Ross had previously been dragged by a car in a June 2025 immigration enforcement operation. So you have a citizen who was presumably trained to disrupt enforcement activities, who was also seen dancing to the beat of her honking horn in her car while she blocked the traffic in the road. And then she unfortunately encounters a potentially trigger-happy agent who has had negative prior experiences doing enforcement. So what's your thoughts on this whole situation?
Well, in addition to that, there's a report, too, that he suffered blunt trauma, injuries, and internal bleeding from being hit by the car.
I read that as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of interesting information out there. You know, without going into the particulars of, you know, is she guilty? Is he guilty? I mean, I think it's really interesting to see the reactions of people to the same videos. You know, some people are trying to justify one thing, some people trying to justify another, and they're using their own frame of reference in order to impose something upon the evidence that's there. And I think that's backwards. I think we have to look at the facts first and then not be afraid to have that challenge our worldview. There's a little more open-mindedness that I think is demanded by the data.
I don't think she was trying to kill or harm the... I think she was trying to flee, and I don't think the punishment, you know, which was wrong, and I don't think mm-hmm. the punishment for that should have been death, but this is what happens when you don't follow the...
Well, you get into high stress situations, intense moments, things will explode, unfortunate things will happen. And I think that's where... We, as Christians, we're called to be people of who bring the peace of Christ. It is a peace which is based on the truth, and we have to be seeking to de-escalate situations and recognize the dignity of all people involved. I think there was a good intent on the part of Ms. Good to, you know, try to stand up for immigrants and for their rights. There's good intent on the part of the ICE agents who are trying to enforce the laws of our country and bring out bad actors, because the people that they were going to arrest were people who were known criminals, not just people who were illegally here as immigrants, but who had done other things. So I think we have to recognize the good of people and try to de-escalate situations rather than incite more violence and protests.
I think there's also just a broader emerging lack of respect for authority.
Yes, that's problematic.
Yeah, and it's almost like we need some PSA announcements advising folks what to do when you are approached by a peace officer or you know, a federal agent like mm-hmm. like the ICE agent was here. Because, you know, like I said, I don't think she deserved to die, but you know what? You also should not be confronting law enforcement. This is not how it's done.
It's very problematic. I mean, you know, Chris, I don't know if you know this, but I've got two brothers, one who is a former police officer, another brother who's currently a police officer. And I've heard the inside stories of them having to go into situations where people are on drugs, they're stirred up by emotions, and it gets really nasty. So we need to de-escalate situations, and we got to try to trust the good intentions of our law enforcement.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires. Navigating News with Faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.